Paracrest, and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Step outside of your comfort zone. See the world with a whole new perspective. Join us and experience the unexplained on The Paranormal View.
And welcome, everybody, right here to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being with us tonight, those listening in the chat room and those listening from around the world. We appreciate each and every one of you. If you are listening from somewhere else other than here in the chat room and you'd like to come over and join everybody here, feel free to do. Just go to the... Where am I at anyway? Go to Para-X.com and click on the live chat for chat now. And you'll be in with all these wonderful people. You'll be able to interact with them and interact with us. Tonight, if you do have questions, you can private chat them to either Henry Foister or Ceiling Cat, and we will get those answered for you. And if you got questions from somewhere around the world and you want to ask, but you don't want to come to the chat room, you can send us a question to theparanormalview@gmail.com and just put attention question. We will get those answered for you. Tonight, we've got a great show lined up for you. I have with us Barbara Duncan.
Yep, I'm here.
And Jeffrey is doing a film shoot, so he is not with us tonight. But we got a great guest. And because we have a lot and appreciate everything, we will get started in just a minute. But I want to remind everybody that our Gettysburg experience is coming up very soon. It's the 13th and 14th of April. So you can go to Facebook and look Henry Foister up, and I will give you all the directions and everything for what we're going to be doing, and you can come over and be with us. So I hope everybody does have a good time with that. With that, Barbara, you got anything new you want to add before we get started? But that was quick.
same old, you know. Things falling out of the sky next week, possibly. We can get into that.
Well, the big... winter storm warning that they've been yakking about for the last week and a half now that's supposed to kill everybody here in the Midwest. I had maybe a handful of flakes fly outside my window and nothing, whereas about 15 miles from me in Oxford, they got like 3 inches. And down toward Kentucky, they got a lot more. So it missed us.
That's good.
So I'm not complaining. It's just been cold. And our guest, when I get him on here in just a second, I'm sure that he probably gets a lot because he's from up around Cleveland, and I'm sure they get a lot of that lake effect stuff. So why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest,
Barbara?
He really
doesn't need much of an introduction because he's one of the family here. Thomas Wertman is the state director of Ohio MUFON. He's also co-director of the Cleveland Ufology Project. Former campus director at the American National University. Welcome back, returning guest, Thomas Wertman.
Thank you. It's good. It's good to be back again.
Always fun to have you.
And you're right, Henry. I mean, we do get hit up here at times. Unfortunately, I'm not on the east side of Cleveland because there's a big difference between east side and west side as far as snow. They really get hammered on the east side of the snow. We had a dusting, I guess you could say a dusting of about 5 inches a few days ago. And it's always fun watching my little dog walk outside. One of my little dogs, he looks outside and all of a sudden it's up to his ears and he doesn't know what to do. And I just have to kind of push him off the porch and say, "Hey, go, man."
Wow.
Yeah.
I know. Patsy's sister, they live on the west side out in a little t- town west of Cleveland. And they used to live over on the east side, and they used to get a lot of snow over there, but not as much out. Well, they still get a lot of snow, but not like the lake effect stuff. So,
yeah, it really gets vicious on the east side, where one of the programs I did a few years ago out in Conneaut, that's in a region out there where I've had individuals say they were shoveling their roof off because they're afraid their roof was going to collapse under the weight of the snow. Now, get that. Now, that's snow.
Yes, it is. And I have seen a lot of snow before, because I spent 4 years in North Dakota when I was in the Air Force. And the first year that I was there, I left Orlando, Florida at 8 o'clock at night, and it was like 85 degrees. And this was June 1st, I believe it was. June the 3rd, I got off the plane in Minot, North Dakota. It was 36 degrees, I believe it was. And I was freezing to death because I just had, you know, summer blues on. And 2 days later, it snowed.
Well, who'd expect that in June?
It does. Sometimes it does. The first winter, I could walk from the barracks because you walk across the field, and then you had the ball diamonds, and then on the other side of ball diamonds, you had the automotive transportation squadron there, and that's where I worked at. And the first winter I was there, I'd walk out to the fence, and it was like 7-8 foot fences. I just stepped across it. That's how deep snow was.
Wow. So, wow.
Yeah, it does snow a lot up there, believe you me.
I'll pass.
We are glad that you're on tonight. We have a great show lined up. There's been some things, I guess, that's been going on pretty good. And we had you on the last time we had you on, we was talking a little bit about this. This event comes from a declassified video released from the Defense Department that took place in 2015. So if we go back and start at the beginning, because this was the third video, but there's other things also that's really involved. And we're going to talk about the other two videos and the new one that's just released, which is supposedly, I've seen it on Facebook, so people's probably already seen it. Let's see. There's an organization that's behind this, is run by a man named Tom DeLong, and the organization is called TTSA. So let's just go back and look at what all this is all about, and what is TTSA, and what were the first two videos about?
Well, what happened is back last year, we're looking roughly about December 16th. There's an article posted in the New York Times in which the Pentagon, after an investigation by outside journalists, admitted that they'd spent $22 million on a program called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. The program at that time was headed by an individual called Luis Elizondo. And the money, to kind of keep it hidden, this is our government, of course. If you came out and said, we want to start a program for UFO investigations, chances are that's never going to fly. But if you tell them we want to research advanced aerial threats, that means you may be looking for something that could be, let's say, Russian, Chinese, et cetera, a defense for that. And it was kind of a way of titling the program so you could slide it through under black budget money on there. Well, the program, they admitted to spending roughly $22 million over 5 years, which went from 2007 to 2012. And after 2012, the money supposedly was being taken away from them But yet Elizondo said the program kept on continuing to run. Now, he didn't say where the funding came from. He didn't say who did the work for him. But it says the funding dried up, but the program is still in existence. And he even admitted to the fact that when he left himself personally last fall, that they placed a new director in that position on there. So that's kind of where all this stuff started coming out from. And one of the things that they featured in that initial article was two videos. The two videos that you talked about on there, Henry, there were two videos in which were taken by military fighters. In this case, it was F-18 fighters off of the coast of California, roughly about 70 miles off of kind of like southwest of San Diego. And these videos were taken in 2000, in this case, 2004. I think I'm getting my memory straight here because there's so much going on. Worked out to be actually about November 14th of 2004, to be exact. Over several days, a guided missile cruiser had picked up an object at altitudes up to 80,000 feet, coming down to about 20,000 feet, and eventually diving very rapidly down to the height of the water. And it kept replaying this same type of motion over and over again, the way it was kind of described, over several days. One of these events, the guided missile cruiser Ticonderoga, actually Princeton, which is a Ticonderoga class cruiser, picked up on its radar system the object at 80,000 feet. And it was monitoring it, and the object dropped down to roughly about 20,000. Well, the Navy and the Marines both had some fighters in the region which were conducting training exercises. The Princeton reached out initially to a E-2 Hawkeye, which is a radar plane, to see if they could pick up anything in the region. The Princeton could, but the Hawkeye couldn't, except a very faint signal. So the Princeton maintained control of the radar. And they guided initially two Marine fighters out of the region. The fighters went to the region where the object was picked up at. As they approached the area, they had absolutely nothing on their radar except each other. One of the pilots looked down and saw what he appeared to be a disturbance on the top of the water. And he was approaching the target area at about 10,000 feet above the radar return that the Princeton was picking up. So he was kind of getting in a above level position. Well, then he decided to descend when he saw the disturbance on the water to check out what that was. Now, along the way, Henry, he was even asked if he had ordnance on board. Now, they said that it wasn't unusual to be guided to an area to investigate an unknown target, because you could have drug traffickers coming up along the coast, something along those lines. But in this case, it was unusual to be asked if he had ordnance. Now, he did not. He also did not have FLIR technology on board for infrared. Well, when he notified the Princeton he didn't have radar contact, they told him to break off and basically return. Well, he said, well, since I'm in the area, why don't I make one big sweep around the region and see what that disturbance is on top of the water? Well, he did. And when he went down to a lower altitude to check it out, the disturbance disappeared. As he swung around, he didn't see anything. So then he broke off contact. Also in the region were a couple of Navy jets. The Navy F-18s were also conducting training exercises out there. And the Princeton guided them to the region. They're also asked, do you have ordnance on board? The only thing they had were dummy missiles, which really do them any good. All it was doing is just replicating something on their wings. They also didn't have FLIR technology. So when they approached the region, they saw nothing visually initially. And they also had nothing on their radar except each other. The Princeton then said, you've merged with the target. That means you're right on top of it. So they looked around visually. One of the pilots of the Navy jet saw the same disturbance on the water that the Marine pilot had done. But he also saw an object which appeared to be hovering above the water. The object, when he descended to get a better look, appeared to turn towards him, and he called it, looked like a tic-tac is what he described it as. And then it started heading in a direction towards him. Well, then they started almost like in something you'd picture in a dogfight. The object started moving. He decided to cut across a circular path to try to cut this object off to kind of intercept it. And the object could make a faster turn than what he could. Then the object disappeared at a speed that he estimated to be above Mach speed, and he lost sight of it. The Princeton who was guiding him in said, "We want you to return to a location about 60 miles away to kind of regroup, basically." And they said, "We want you to go to this altitude." And a strange thing was, as they turned and tried to go back to that region, the object was there before they were. And in a matter of minutes, that object had traveled roughly 60 miles. The videos that you see released on the internet, to me, they were not from either of those fighters because they didn't have FLIR technology. But the big question is, where did they come from? It almost appears that they came from similar events in the same region. Now, they didn't, or the Navy didn't say when they declassified these, what planes had taken them, exactly what day they were taken on, by who. But from the pilot one of the pilot's conversations after the event, he'd notified some of the future pilots going out of what he'd been observing, and it's very possible that those other pilots had taken the images with the FLIR technology. And it shows an object moving on the screen. One shows the object going basically straight ahead. Another one shows it turning at a high rate of speed. Now, Tudor Stars Academy put these videos out shortly, or right around the time of the article when it came out. And they said they had a third one. It was about a week ago now, the third video did come out, released by Tudor Stars Academy. And when that video came out, it appeared to be very similar to the other two. It was taken by a similar camera system, and it showed, in this case, the view from an F-18, and the pilot had his infrared camera kind of aimed down and to the left of the fighter, and he was tracking something. You could see it kind of like somebody taking a camera and trying to capture an object way off in a distance as it's moving very quickly. You could see it kind of come in the frame, out of the frame, back and forth. Then all of a sudden you hear the pilot get ecstatic because he locked onto it. And he's able to track this object, which appeared to be moving at a reasonably high rate of speed above the ocean floor. And the object is only seen for maybe about 30 seconds and it disappears. Now, I'd really like to see the before and after video that went along with this, but it does indicate something unusual was going on. Well, you mentioned Tudor Stars Academy. Well, you've got Tudor Stars Academy, which is a group that's out now. It's run by Tom DeLong. Tom DeLong used to be in a group called Blink 182. So here you've got this rocker out here who's had a lifelong fascination with UFOs. And he decided to put together a research group to investigate UFOs. And these videos were provided by his group. Now, when you start looking at the trail behind it, when the videos came out, one of the individuals who talked about the video was named Luis Elizondo. He was a gentleman who was with the Pentagon. He's now moved over, and he works with Tom DeLong. Another individual who is also associated with other projects, his name was Chris Mellon. He's the one who talked about the second video. And he said the second video came out in 2015. Now, it also came from reportedly a U.S. Navy fighter, but the date and exact location was not given, except it was on the East Coast. Now, Chris Mellon has an interesting background. The Mellon family goes back to Mellon Banking, but Mellon was also a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for intelligence in both the Clinton and Bush administrations. So here you've got a gentleman who just isn't some individual that's got an interest in these things. No, he's had a very, let's say, interesting background as far as the government goes in intelligence. You've also got some other players into the Stars Academy, which are very interesting out there. Besides, in this case, Elizondo, besides, in this case, Chris Mellon, they've got an individual out there called Hal Putoff. Now, Hal Putoff, if you look at the webpage for To the Stars Academy out there, they're listed as he's listed as being vice president in science technology. Well, Putoff has a background coming from General Electric. Also, he worked for Sperry, but he was also part of the CIA at one time. And one of the things he did was research into remote viewing. Now, I started looking at this panel he's got. You see the names, but I started digging deeper on there and saying, Barbara, who are these people? What backgrounds do they really have? And all of a sudden, you see some guy who's coming out now with an engineering background, but also he conducted research in remote viewing for the CIA. It makes you say, what are they really going after with this, you know?
You mean part of the Stargate program?
Well, he was okay. Part of the Stargate program at one time on air. And what I was doing, we had a meeting a couple weeks ago. And after the meeting, I sat down and made this giant triangle. Anyhow, the detectives get out the pins and put them on the board with the faces and stuff and put the strings between them, connecting everything together. That's what I was doing with my triangle. And in one corner, I put in the initial program from the Pentagon, the Advanced Aerial Threat Identification Program. In another corner, I put To the Stars Academy. And the third corner, I put in BASS, which is Bigelow Aerospace, which is also a big player in this whole thing. And I started connecting the dots, but what was popping up is I saw a number of names not only crossing between these organizations, but I started looking at the backgrounds of these individuals. And what really started popping up was, if you were doing research along these lines under Barbara and Henry, if you're doing research for UFOs, you're thinking maybe initially, what would you look for? Well, you may be looking for trace evidence, looking for objects. And if I was doing that, one of the things I'd really be maybe building a panel around would be a lot of people of engineering backgrounds, people that have metallurgical backgrounds, backgrounds in electronics. All these associate areas with something physical under, something tangible we associate with, like reverse engineering, let's say an F-18 fighter. Somebody 200 years ago, if they were to get an F-18 fighter, would not understand the technology, but they may try to figure out what it is and how it worked. Well, I think of physical attributes initially. But when you start looking at the backgrounds of these individuals, it didn't seem like a whole lot of them had backgrounds in those regions. I was finding more backgrounds in biotech, life support, mind control. That's an interesting one, isn't it?
Makes sense, though.
Yeah. Military trauma, microbiology, all these particular areas like this. And on To the Stars Academy, I only saw really one name that jumped out. The name was Justice. He was one in this case that worked at the Skunk Works. His name was Steve Justice. He worked at the Skunk Works, which we associate with like a lot of our modern technology as far as stealth fighters and so forth on here. The rest of them didn't have that type of a background. Now, one that really jumped out was unusual. There is an individual, I believe the name was Khan, Norm Khan. When I saw a picture of him, he kind of looked like Max Headroom. I don't want to make fun of him because he's probably an extremely intelligent man. But that picture jumped out. But then when I looked at his background, biological weapons. That's what one of the sites listed him as. Now, he's supposedly involved with national security and management, dealing with security on there. But you see all these interesting backgrounds pop up with To the Stars Academy on there. But as I was talking to you earlier on there, Henry, when you look at the webpage, you see a rocker. You see a number of things out there promoting almost things for younger generations. Now, you do see things saying we want to take and reverse engineer aircraft if we can get, or some sort of craft if we can get it. They also have goals of transportation and so forth on there. They also want to produce movies. But then when you go from that page and then you look at the players behind it, see a lot of people with very serious backgrounds.
And what the thing that stands out to me is supposedly they're not being funded by the government now because they're asking for investors. And you got all these big people, which is on his team. And they have, I'm sure that the jobs that they've held, they got paid well doing those. But now that they're doing this, where are they getting the money from to pay these people?
You know, that's a good question. Maybe they've got silent investors that just don't show up on, in this case, their webpage. Kind of like in a related thing, that $22 million that the Pentagon admitted spending. Do you know what that really may be on there, Henry? That may be cost overruns.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
In other words,
this obviously, this funding isn't a line item in the congressional budget, correct?
It doesn't appear to be, no, because it's black budget money. And there's a number of things behind that, Barbara. With the black budget money on there, the $22 million, and where I was going with this is, you've got regular day-to-day operations being funded by the Pentagon, the militaries, and so forth. The initial group that Elizondo ran, in this case, I guess you could call it ATIP, if he had photos he needed analyzed, he wouldn't necessarily have to go out and contract that out to somebody else. He could come out in the Navy and say, hey, I've got these photographs we need analyzed. Look at these. Well, that wouldn't probably run in his budget. Radar data. We need this radar data analyzed. Matter of fact, we need to obtain the radar data. He just may have to put in a simple request and be able to get it. And you've got all these other areas regarding collection of data that could be at his fingertips that probably wouldn't account in that budget whatsoever. So when I see that $22 million, I kind of visualize that maybe as the tip of the iceberg. And as we know, like an iceberg is only about 10% above the water. So who knows? I'm just throwing a number out there just to be who I am. But you could have maybe $200 million below the surface that was actually spent on this stuff and continues to be spent. Think about this, too. You've got different branches of the military. That if there's potential evidence out there that something is being gathered, they're going to want to get a hold of it because they're also competitive between the branches. I mean, the Navy's going to say we can do things better than the Air Force. The Air Force will say we can do things better than the Army. And it's going to be a competitive thing out there. So you may have these branches cooperating in some senses because if they think there may be a major payoff. So when they say the organization is still running, but yet without funding, it's probably through different agencies within the Pentagon providing the resources. And if they're running now without any money, that $22 million was taken away was just a drop in the budget, probably.
Well, here's another thought. The other agencies funding it might be science regulatory agencies like the National Science Institute or the National Health Institute.
You're right. I mean, since they're branched out in all these different medical-related fields, it's very possible on there. They're getting money from all the above.
But exactly what is it that they're doing?
You know, that's a good question. I think what they're really doing is they're trying to go after resources in some manner. But it makes me wonder if maybe one of the big focuses is not just the object himself, but the human factors involved with it on there. Or in this case, maybe alien intelligence. That's what they're really going after. One of the things that they did back in one of the earlier programs that Hal Puthoff was involved with, when he was involved initially with Bigelow years ago, is they were going after individuals who had sightings. They were reaching out and contacting these individuals and getting their stories. But they were interested very much in individuals who had had close contact. And it was almost like they were looking for maybe changes in somebody, effects left over by having close contacts with objects or basically UFOs. That's what they're going after. And we had several people that I know of in our Cleveland region who claimed to have been contacted by these earlier groups. And they were interested in the fact of the close contact. Now, some of the people I see on the board of like Two to Stars Academy, biomedical research, matter of fact, one is genetics. When I was putting some stuff together a couple days ago, I don't know if you saw in there, Barbara, the what was called the alien mummy out there popped up on the internet. And the name that popped up just jumped right out at me was Gary Nolan. And they said Gary Nolan had done research on this mummy and basically identified as being like a deformed child, a child who'd had problems. But yet, Gary Nolan is also on the board of Two to Stars Academy in genetics. So when I saw his name, I didn't know, you know, how big he really was. But then when you see that, wait a minute, this is a guy that a number of people turn to for genetics, he's got to be one of the leaders in that field. So it makes you wonder, okay, if they're looking for people who maybe had close contacts, you've got people who are into genetics, DNA. Are they looking for something in blood, looking for effects that way also?
Or, you know, one of the big emerging fields now is cosmobiology or astrobiology. And all those little bugs that come in on meteorites. If they can survive the vacuum of space on a meteor, they can survive the vacuum of space on a spaceship too.
That's right. Matter of fact, you remember that the one astronaut, the one twin, came back recently. And they looked at his DNA compared to his brother, and they said they had saw changes in identical twins from being in space for so long.
Really?
Hmm. Yes. So maybe they're looking for effects in DNA. Oh. That may be some type of a register on it.
Is that the government that did that, or is that To the Stars Academy did that?
Well, I can't confirm To the Stars Academy did that, but you see people with potential backgrounds. That these are things, again, just kind of speculating what they could be looking for.
You should wonder how theoretical this is actually coming.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Barbara, because is it speculation or do they really know something out there? That's why they're looking at this side more so than the side of a physical craft. That there's something really there that's got their attention.
Well, you remember a couple of years ago, the talk that was going around about a space area found under, was it Santa Barbara or Malibu, around that area?
Yeah, right around that region.
Not that far away from San Diego, Santa Barbara. They certainly could have traveled.
It's not that far away.
There was this god-awful movie with, is it Dustin Hoffman, called Sphere?
I've heard of that.
And this is right around that image. He had a group of people. They were largely theoretical scientists, and they had a theory of this is what you need if you're going to have first contact. You need to have biologists. You need to have metallurgists. You need to have engineers, because you need a group, a team, that's going to be able to thoroughly assess first contact or aircraft or biological beings.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds a lot like what's happening.
Exactly. And the more I dig into it, it seems like that's what they're looking for more. Now, there's some other things that they may be looking for out there as far as materials, physical evidence on there. I guess the term would be like metal materials, not metal, but meta materials on there. Something that's unusual.
Different than what's here on this planet.
Well, yes and no. The reason I say yes and no is because one of the first thoughts you may have is, well, if we're looking for from something from space, it's got to be completely exotic out of materials that we would never find here. That's almost what jumps out at you right away. But in reality, you may find everything out there exists on our periodic tables. It's already here. But the difference is the isotopic levels of those materials, the characteristics behind them. If you remember, like in Roswell, they described having metals that were almost like cellophane you could crinkle up, and it would flatten themselves right back out. So you're looking for materials with unusual characteristics to them along those same lines. And that would be a big identifier right there. Now, they may be looking for something along those lines. Another thing they could be looking for, too, would be looking for materials which have been affected, kind of going back to what you mentioned a few minutes ago there, Barbara, by space. You look at these materials, you analyze them, and you could tell if these materials had been in space at one time. Now, that doesn't mean that's a direct indicator that they're alien by any means, because, I mean, right now we have to worry about that Chinese craft coming down over our heads any day. So it could be something man-made by us, but it's an indicator to me that you could kind of separate things out. Now, I've heard some say that that would be one of the things they'd really want to look for, but I'm very open to this field, that things may not just be from outer space, but things may be interdimensional. And you'd want to look for traces in some way along those lines. So I think that's something that they may be really looking for, Henry. On the other hand, is materials that are very unusual. But what's to say they haven't found them and they're trying to reverse engineer them already?
Well, I almost hate to bring up the an acronym, but DARPA. Already, you know, looks at different things. You know, the new thing out now is time crystals, and they've already started funding that. So when you start talking about out of phase or being able to alter certain things, they're already in, way into it.
Well, a couple of the individuals associated with these groups, that goes back to also some of their specialties. I'm just kind of glancing over the list, but I remember seeing in this case, a couple of the individuals went back to basically time travel and time study. So I thought that was kind of an unusual thing to throw into this individuals with their specialties.
Now, here's another really interesting concept, which is, suppose we are, by being in space and having that kind of material come back, that we are, in a sense, bringing back some alien microbes or alien processes. Could they also be studying that?
I think it's possible. I really think they're very open to looking at everything they can possibly get their hands on. Because if you think of how much a group would have to gain if they could identify something out there potentially. Look at the way the private space program now, different space programs is taken off by like Elon Musk and the rest. And think about something that they could identify to help an organization out, a company out, and how that could put them in the forefront, like when Microsoft took off and Apple took off with computers. They could be there forever, basically, if they could get some interesting technology out there. I think it's just speculation on my part.
So how much is the government actually involved in all this? Why would you need to the Stars Academy to look into all that when all these guys mainly come from the government to start with? Why didn't the government just put them together and say, look, do this?
Good question, Henry. The government may still be doing stuff below the surface. And what's to say that these individuals who aren't doing it privately aren't feeding things eventually back to the government or other private groups out there and sharing information? I mean, if you think about it, once with the CIA, would you ever be completely out of the CIA?
You wouldn't think so. And it leads you to wonder how secretive this to the Stars Academy is.
You're right. But also you look at the advances in private space programs right now. Look at where they've gone. I mean, Bigelow Aerospace was founded in 1999. He's now putting inflatable units up to the space station in less than 20 years. I mean, that to me, that is incredible out there. That's a tremendous accomplishment by that gentleman. And you think of what private industry may be doing, maybe more aggressive, because first of all, they're not limited by, in this case, maybe a lot of the internal bureaucracy and the politicking inside of each group, because Elizondo said he left just because of the fact that he felt restricted on there and he wasn't getting as much cooperation as he needed. But by going, in this case, to a separate organization out there, a private organization, you may eliminate a lot of that stuff out there. And maybe he feels like it may streamline what they do.
So that the private industry, the competition itself, I mean, we're making leaps and bounds in practically everything now, technology-wise. And the competition just helps that fact.
It does. And I think that's a lot of it right there, is that the private industry out there is just maybe going to take it to another level. And also it's a way of reaching out to people and getting information. People may be more receptive of working with, on the outside, a group which is public, like To the Stars Academy, than turning over stuff if they thought it was going to the government.
They're not publishing papers, whereas scientific, government-funded scientific projects publish.
Right. When you get groups like To the Stars Academy right now, they're very new. All they're doing is releasing videos of these events and then posting some stories. But everything is kind of like going right inside the organization. You don't know what's really happening with it on there.
So there's also patent laws involved here.
Oh, yes. Patent laws involved. But also, here's another thing, Barbara. By going to private industry and the government basically letting, like when they were contracting things out to Bigelow, they're also eliminating oversight.
True.
They don't have to respond to oversight groups of the government. You're not going to file a Freedom of Information Act with Bigelow Aerospace and get any return on it, I don't believe, because they're private.
Good point.
So this may be done intentionally out there. That's, let's give the things out to private players Why? Because they're not responsible to federal oversight and Freedom of Information Act request.
Well, I think we're going to go take a break. Won't be a real long one because we have lots to talk about. And I just want to remind everybody, if you do have questions, private chat them to Henry Forster or Ceiling Cat. We will get those answered for you. And if you want to send a question by email, you can do that to theparanormalview@gmail.com and just put attention question and we will get those answered. So, Barbara, you want to take us out for a quick break?
Folks, you're listening to The Paranormal View here on Para X Radio Network with our very special guest tonight, Thomas Wertmann, talking UFOs. And we will be right back after a few messages.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk-time stroll down the Boulevard of Broken Dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
So, Tim, around here at Para X, we're considered oldies because we've been here so long, right?
You know, yeah, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with oldies. In fact, you know what? I really love oldies.
Well, yeah, me too. I mean, it kind of takes me back to a time when my cauldron had training wheels and the Black Cat Lounge was called the Black Kitten Lounge. Sometimes I miss the good old days.
Sis, there's no need to miss them at all because all you have to do is turn on and listen to Rock with the Shock.
Rock with the Who?
No, little sis. No, not the Who. The Shock.
Are you psychic? Do you often have dreams that come true? Do you have an interest in hypnosis or astrology? If you'd like to learn more about classes, events, and books on metaphysics, then go to our website, www.theartofmediumship. This is Elaine Kosmaskis, director of the New England School of Metaphysics and author of The Art of Mediumship.
I found it at last! Marla's Sacred Cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy metal maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron!
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going!
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para X Radio Network.
Hi, this is Master Tarot Card Reader Ken Bogle, and I highly encourage you to tune in every Monday night to the Para-X Radio Network for the Paracave, hosted by Matt Gesso, as he goes in search of the truth in the supernatural, metaphysical, mystic, and paranormal. Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, only on the Para-X Radio Network. I never miss it, and neither should you.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And welcome back, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being with us tonight, those in the chat room, and those listening from around the world. We appreciate each and every one of you. And speaking from around the world, Barbara, where do we have listeners at?
They're coming in from the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, Israel, and lots of unknowns.
Wow. Well, that is good.
Does it say where the unknowns are really from?
Which is kind of scary.
Yeah, they could be alien from Alpha Centauri, or they could be in Washington, D.C.
Well, you know, yeah. We're getting, is it 4G web on the moon? So, yeah, that could very well be alien.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Yeah.
Really?
They're putting 4G network up there so that the space station and satellites can better communicate. Makes sense.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That it does.
Or they found that monolith up there anyway. And
I wonder how much Spectrum is going to charge him for that.
There goes your Comcast.
Yeah. Don't worry. They just said onto your bill this month, Henry.
I believe that.
It was in one of those areas where they basically don't really say where it's been going to. This is like tax for this.
Wow.
Yeah, that $10,000 hammer.
We was talking about Bigelow, and he bought the Skinwalker Ranch, and it used to be there used to be an organization called NIDS, and that was replaced by BAASS, which is Bigelow Aerospace Studies. And that was about 2004. It had a more of a clandestine mission than the other one. And to the stars, didn't they have things to do with the Skinwalker Ranch also?
Well, Bigelow had what he called his National Institute of Discovery Science. And you're right, it was founded back like 1995 and went to 2004. And he started putting together different individuals with unique backgrounds on there to be part of his group to do investigations of things like the Skinwalker Ranch. And that was where he first got involved with Harold Puthoff on there. And he also had individuals that were involved with remote viewing and other areas along those lines. Matter of fact, John Alexander was involved with that at the same time. Colonel John Alexander was involved with the remote viewing project. And if I remember correctly, Alexander was also at Los Alamos at one time. And kind of like with the remote viewing goes back to the Men Who Stare at Goats movie on there. What you can do with mind control. So they started that back 1995, went to 2004, and they kind of closed down because they said they weren't really producing results. This was just a few years before Bigelow really started getting involved in the space community, or he got involved in the space community about 1999, so they're kind of overlapping on there, I guess you could say. And then he got out of it. But then at 2007 is when he re-entered everything. And how he got involved with it under a different group was he was good friends of a senator, Harry Reid, from Nevada. Bigelow's also from Nevada. His aerospace company is outside of Las Vegas. And he talked to Reid. Reid got together with a couple of friends in the Pentagon. And they basically ran the money for the funding through black budget on there. And they got monies appropriated. This is where that initial $22 million came from on there. And what they supposedly did is they supposedly farmed out the jobs on there. When Elizondo took over, he said, well, you know, they put out things for bid to private groups. And again, this goes back to the speculation, Henry, that maybe this was intentional, that they wanted things farmed out, because it would get away from Freedom of Information Act request.
Right.
And by the way, before I forget, I did a check, and there was roughly 2,000 Freedom of Information Act requests submitted on this particular area of the Pentagon. And a lot of those were not answered, because if they go back to private industry, commercial industry, they don't have to respond to it. So maybe that was intentional on that part.
Sounds like it. That way the government can actually get things done without having to say anything to the public.
Exactly. Well, Bigelow was reportedly the winner of the bid. They probably looked at the fact that he had his own private aerospace company out there. He'd had a former program, the National Institute of Discovery Science, which had been conducting research into paranormal events and UFOs, et cetera, out there. So he also probably got the bid because he's a very good friend of Reed's. That's another issue in itself, too. That does kind of help, you know. And think about this. If he was to attain an artifact, his business could grow by leaps and bounds. And whose state was it in? But Harry Reid's. So, I mean, it would come right back to his own state and help him out. Well, Bass then started coming on board and building, in this case, their own group after that 2007 time frame on here. As a matter of fact, they started going out and getting, soliciting people to basically help them in a roundabout way. At that time, they approached MUFON. And there was an agreement for less than a year of MUFON, where they wanted to get data from MUFON in exchange for helping fund, in this case, investigations. Investigators like myself, we do everything out of our own pocket. And that can get kind of expensive at times. I mean, just maintaining computers, software, et cetera, the equipment we need for investigations, that can get costly. Well, he was going to give our national organization funding to help out with, especially in this case, travel expenses, to go from point A to get point B, because if we have a case here in Ohio where I'm at, if something were to crash, like a Roswell, for example, they would want me there with as soon as possible to get to that object or whatever it is before the individuals in the green khakis come in and ferret everything away.
Right.
Well, when you work a full-time job and you've got to do everything out of your own pocket, it makes it rough. Well, the funding would have been there to help get me from, let's say, point A to point B, and also provide much needed equipment for research on there. So, I mean, we could benefit greatly from that as an organization out there. The agreement lasted less than a year. I don't know all the details. I wasn't privy to that stuff, but it's very possible that there is a differing of viewpoints on how the agreement should have been handled, maybe on both sides. And it kind of fell apart in less than a year. And I think there were questions about maybe who had the most to gain. And he kind of alluded to something about like that before the break. that everything could be very much one-sided. You mentioned about things going in one direction and not coming back out. Well, if somebody like Bigelow is getting all the data, all the research, and if we're not getting, you know, reciprocal actions, it doesn't help us. But if we have reciprocal actions in this case, both organizations, I think, could really benefit. And I think there was just at that time maybe different opinions or doubts or miscommunication on how things were to be handled, and that agreement fell apart.
Can I ask you, were there offers of data analysis as well?
Well, in this case, his organization was getting data. They were analyzing things, but to my knowledge, there was very little return on what was coming back on that data analysis on there. I do know that some of the witnesses in our region were being contacted by his group who had filed reports. But I didn't hear a whole lot about those events other than what the witnesses themselves posted later on. It was just very, very much closed, you know. And this is the beginning time when this all went down. It was right when I was coming in as a rookie investigator. And it happened within, I think, about 6 months after I started with MUFON on there. And I remember seeing, Barbara, the communications going back and forth, some of the different things. And I really didn't know what all to make of it at that time. But now, I guess you could say more of the pieces of the puzzle are all falling together on there. But what I see him as is somebody who is very passionate about this subject, very interested in it. Matter of fact, he even went out and he started buying up private websites. I found areas where he purchased websites, one in particular up in Canada, that individuals were turning reports into something like MUFON. They were filing reports for years, and a private individual was running the website. He was researching things. And then per his notices, he was had time constraints. He wasn't feeling well. He sold the organization off. And this organization called Bass purchased it. And they said they wanted to keep up the excellent job he'd done. But one thing they never did is identified who Bass really is.
Right.
Bigelow Aerospace. And what he did is he purchased all the reports and all the data behind the reports. That's what he was really going after. As a matter of fact, Henner, if you wanted to check this out, if you went to the FAA's website and you kind of like Googled FAA, UFOs, and you wanted to report a UFO, you'd be guided to a page that's called Air Traffic Control. I think it's entitled Section 8 Unidentified Flying Object Reports. It gives you an 800 number to call, also an email address for Bigelow Aerospace.
Bigelow Aerospace.
So, I mean, all roads are leading right back to him. And when you see To the Stars Academy with some players involved with Bigelow, it makes you wonder, okay, is Bigelow working maybe with To the Stars Academy?
That's what I would assume, because they had things to do with the Skinwalker Ranch also. At least Tom DeLonge did, so his organization probably is affiliated with it under the table, you might say.
And it goes back to what I was saying about the private investors. I mean, Bigelow may be in a way helping fund the research done by Tom DeLonge. And maybe they have a reciprocal agreement going that you give me this data and I share some things back.
So my question is, how did some rock star, if he was a rock star, I mean, I know he was a rock and roller, but I don't know how much of a star he was, but how did he get affiliated with all these top government people to form To the Stars Academy?
Well, one of the things he did is he communicated with a gentleman called John Podesta. Now, Podesta has connections going back to Clinton and different administrations, Obama. As a matter of fact, Podesta was in Obama's administration And he made a comment that when he left his office with Obama, that one of the things he was disappointed he didn't push for more was disclosure of information regarding UFOs. He's been very big into it. He actually wrote a foreword for Leslie Keene's book regarding UFOs and generals, et cetera. So he was communicating with Tom DeLonge. I mean, DeLonge had an interest. He reached out to Podesta, and they struck up conversations. Now, when you think about it, I mean, if I saw somebody contacting me who is a rock singer, I mean, rock performer, I don't know how serious you'd want to take them if they've got an interest in UFOs if you're Podesta. But then again, it appears as though they had like face-to-face meetings and things progressed. And when I look at some of the names again, I'm just picking up one of the sheets now and looking at Henry. There is actually a Podesta connection with some of the individuals going back to the Stars Academy, going way back. Matter of fact, I think it was actually Chris Mellon may have had a connection with Podesta because they both were, if I remember correctly, in basically as part of like the White House, at a similar time involved with intelligence. So I think you've got a number of these people kind of overlapping each other at one point. You've got connections between them. And let's say, for example, Tom DeLonge says, hey, I've got this interest. He reaches out Podesta. Podesta now gives him, when you see that name associated, more credibility. And Podesta may say, hey, why don't you reach out and contact this guy? Then all of a sudden, all these strings start getting pulled and everything starts coming together. And one of the names that, again, I'm still trying to decipher everything myself, is there's a name called Jim Semivan, which popped up. He was with the CIA in operations. I'm thinking if you had somebody who is higher up in the CIA, they may have the contacts that says, wait a minute, if you're looking for this type of person with these individual characteristics, knowledge levels, this is who you want. And when you look over the list on there, Henry, a number of these people came from like the CIA. So it's almost like somebody knew who to reach out for to pull in for these different specialties on there. At least that's my take on it.
You know, what I find really interesting in this too is from what you're telling me, the lack of international cooperation here is interesting by its absence in that if it were CIA, you'd want to keep that international intelligence community out of it.
And that's what appears they've done. I mean, you see a lot of it all going back to the CIA, connections with the CIA, national security. And you're right, Barbara, you don't see in this case, international people being involved with that when I looked over the list. I mean, when I go back to some of the older programs that were run, you may find somebody like a Jacques Vallée, his name popping up. But now it seems like they're really kind of like focusing on specific areas of interest on there.
And that fascinates me because this can't just be an American contact exclusive, correct?
No, what makes us think that we're any more special than somebody else out there, you know? It's got to be international. But it's almost like what's closing down is they're narrowing down saying we want our people involved, and that's it. One of the things that came up the other night in a conversation was, and when you look over a couple of things on here involved with laser research, a couple of them have biomedical weapons, is would there be an interest of the military to look for some sort of a weapon? I mean, the military is always looking for a better weapon than somebody else has. Are they looking for something like that too?
And I find it also odd that Elon Musk seems to be on the outside of this. Of course, number one, he's South African. But It also is that he seems to be an outsider in a lot of this, although he's extremely prolific and extremely successful in what he's doing.
He is. I mean, you have the ones like the Bransons, the other ones out there. But here, everything I'm seeing is you're not seeing those names of the foreign, let's say, potential investors popping up. You're seeing things staying here, like Bigelow, the names that's coming to the forefront. You're not seeing the foreign investors on there. It's almost like maybe they're being, who knows, maybe being locked out, you know, of this whole thing.
Or is it, could it be that it's still part of the old boy network of communications? We know you from your lineage in the military or the intelligence community, and anybody else outside of that is going to be excluded.
Okay. Could be. That could be.
And if you're talking about weaponry, I'm sure that every country doesn't want that to happen. I mean, the Russia, they don't want to be advanced, or if they are advanced, they don't want us to know anything, and vice versa, because they're afraid if everybody gets it, then we'd be fighting each other instead of the aliens.
Yeah, or if they want to have knowledge of something that we don't have. I mean, if you remember back, we used to put out disinformation about different military things that we'd had, even though we didn't have that technology. We wanted them to think that we had something that we didn't.
Right.
So they would go out and spend billions of dollars trying to develop a technology to prevent something that we didn't even have. They're wasting their monetary resources.
Which, again, is they're spending money on stuff that they shouldn't be when they should be spending the money on their people.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
So,
well,
go ahead, Barbara.
I was going to ask if we could get to the mind control part, because to me that's also fascinating. You're not seeing a lot of information coming out about that yet they're leaking video.
Yeah, and well, we were talking about this the other night, several of us in one of the groups around the area, is that the craft we're looking at, there was speculation that what if it's being controlled by the mind? Not by somebody reaching out and handling physical controls like we would, but a lot of it, number one, is mind control. You're communicating directly with the craft. And there's also some thoughts that maybe the craft are basically alive. They're biological in themselves. And they're communicating. Steven Spielberg put out a TV miniseries a number of years ago called Taken. And in one of the things that they did, the individuals who they were trying to get to basically fly this craft that had been recovered, they're looking for very unique characteristics. They're looking for people who had ESP, very strong senses along those lines, again, to not only communicate with each other, but you'd look at communicating with potentially the craft. And on one thought, maybe that's what potentially they're looking for. The other thought is maybe they're looking for a way for these how these individuals that are inside these craft or behind these craft are piloting them. Maybe they don't speak like we do. Maybe they're communicating through almost like telepathy on there. They communicate back and forth. So there's so many ways you can almost tie into this, maybe,
well,
Barbara.
I'm also wondering, is it possible that some of these UFO sightings, the ones without any data to back them up, are hallucinations anyway, but projected hallucinations?
That's another thing we've discussed in the past, too, in some of the groups I'm with, is that it's almost like it's creating, in this case, maybe like a hologram in somebody's mind. Or, for that matter, somebody did see something maybe it's a way of kind of masking it. Speaking from my own experience, I think we talked about this some time ago on here, Barbara, that it's one of those things that I've been through experiences myself in the past that at times have me on the edge on one hand saying, this didn't happen to me. On the other hand, another side says, yeah, it did. And it involves memories of contact I had back in my teens of where I remembered some sketchy memories of this. And then I went through some regression several years ago that brought more stuff out and kind of connected the dots of memories I had as a I guess you could say preteen, early teen years on there, being taken from a house. The house I was living in, I remembered almost like feeling like I was being elevated through the ceiling. A lot of things that some people describe. But at that time, these memories started. I'd never read books along the lines of the things that happened to me. I remembered being inside of an object with no apparent like features inside whatsoever, other than just like you weren't technically looking at a dome, but you're just looking at some place that seemed like it went out forever. Just a kind of a gray area. And I remember seeing something peering in my face that you could closely associate with the appearance of a gray. And at that time, everything was kind of going on under Barbara, like by mind control. I remember laying down this, for lack of a better word, table. I don't remember seeing any features on it whatsoever. Laying down this entity looking at me in close range, maybe about a foot away from my face. And it was almost like it was trying to read everything within my mind. And when we were playing the tape of the regression later on, all of a sudden I started saying, something went wrong, and I was able to stand to basically sit up on a table. And I felt in this case, Barbara, like it was trying to enforce mind control on me to make me lay back down. It would not physically grab me, but it kept almost like staring at me, almost like hypnotic eyes saying, lay down, lay down. And I wouldn't do it. And I had the feeling that this had gone on many, many times in the past where I'd been looked at, but this is the first time it didn't have control. And when I was able to set up, it didn't have feelings, but it was almost like if it did have feelings, it was like shocked that it couldn't control me, going back to the mind control. And when you bring this up about the mind control, maybe this is something that they're looking at. I mean, in my own case, I keep being on the fence on one hand saying, it didn't happen. But then every time you say it didn't happen, something pops up that says, wait a minute, here's something else that is unusual that really makes you think twice, you know?
Sort of a post-hypnotic suggestion of you're going to remember it this way.
Yeah. And we tried going back several times to try to get through these areas. And the person who was doing the regression, I don't know what this is, but this is extremely strong and it's not letting you get through, because I was getting to the point of, you can hear my breath. I started hyperventilating. You could hear my breathing going through the roof at one point. And I think she kind of panicked and pulled me out of it because she was afraid that, since I'm not a spring chicken anymore, that it could be much more serious. It kept progressing.
Like maybe you get lost.
Yeah, well, I think she was afraid maybe I'd have a heart attack. And I'm not going to have somebody have a heart attack in my house, you know. This would not look good on record. But, when I look at the mind control, that may be a very big part of it, that, okay, maybe these entities, whatever they are, use their mind to control a lot of things. They don't rely on maybe the physical aspect of doing like we would with force. Also, like you said, Barbara, they could be creating a image in your mind on what they want you to perceive. And one of the events I've described on your show before, one of the memories I had was when I was 13 years old of seeing a craft directly above myself and a friend. It was treetop height and looked to be larger than a car. It was just hovering there, just kind of like oscillating back and forth very, very slowly. And I remembered looking up, seeing it, but for some reason, I, under Barbara, I would never tell my friend standing right in front of me to look up. And he would look up. So maybe it was a way of them saying to me, hey, don't tell him, you know? Just kind of ignore us. We don't exist up here right now. But then later on, I mean, we were doing this little hunting expedition, as I called it, and I use that term loosely. Once we got out of the woods that we were in South Carolina, he started telling me about this entity he described as a huge owl about a foot tall standing in front of us. And I never saw it. Going back to the mind control, maybe something told him, hey, I'm not really an entity. I'm an owl. Don't be afraid of me. 4 feet tall. Have big black eyes. I don't exist. Don't worry about me right now. You know?
Well, you know, do these... when people get a hold of this information, is there a subgroup of people, you know, I know this is going to sound really X-File-ish, but that claim to have implants? And is it possible that those subset of people are being tracked and are being looked at by, say, these so-called private industry groups?
That's very possible. I mean, one of my friends suggested, she says, well, maybe you have an implant, because sometimes when I get involved in certain UFO cases, when I'm investigating, I have certain feelings in that area, almost like there's a connection physically with that event. And maybe if the witness is what they've experienced, like there's a physical connection. Now, my body's had so many CAT scans, it should be able to tell me if there's anything in my body that's unusual. But on the other hand, they're not really looking for unusual things when they've done the CAT scans. With the implants, there's been thoughts that they have been able to monitor people, to track people on here. And who's really the source of these implants? I mean, you have people talking about aliens reportedly putting these things up individuals' noses and so forth on there, or people finding implants in various parts of their body. But to me, I'm one of these very open individuals that who says the government's also not potentially involved in this in some manner.
Or who says to it's even a metallic implant, it could very well be a biological one?
It may be, because one of my friends is really wanting to get her hand on some implants, because there's been talks of different implants being recovered, and then for whatever reason, we're never able to obtain them. Now, it could go back to maybe the implant really didn't exist. But on the other hand, if you're into the conspiracy side, maybe somebody's intercepting these things and it's just disappearing before they ever reach the researcher's hands. And that's why we'd really like to get a hold of one here where I'm at in Ohio to look at these. To identify, you know, I mean, Roger Lear this before he passed away. But is this really a metal device, or is this, like you say, biological? Because there have been reports of these things attaching themselves to parts of individuals' bodies. And when they've tried to extract these, the objects are almost moving, like trying to keep individuals from removing them from the body.
Wow. I got a question from Tabby Cat in the chat room. She wants to know what you think of the theory that Bigfoot are being sent here by ETs. Not that she believes it, but she needed to know your opinion.
Well, can't deny that there's not a connection, because back in the 1970s, I remember reading reports from our nearby state of Pennsylvania that there is a UFO in particular coming down above a railroad tracks. And the witness's observation was they saw an object, an entity that appeared to be like Bigfoot drop from the craft and run off into the woods. Now, it's like, it makes you wonder, was this thing that was something that was taken from the woods on the board to craft, or was it going the other way around? But there was a connection back with Bigfoot, where I had my experience in South Carolina in the 1960s. My buddy at that time that I was hunting with said, hey, there's a swamp willy back in here. And the swamp willy he was referring to was a Bigfoot type creature that supposedly lived in that same region. Now, I kind of blew it off until years later. I went through the Bigfoot Research Organization's website, and just for curiosity, I looked up the region I looked at in South Carolina, and on the road I lived on in that region was a Bigfoot report from like the 1980s or something like that, where an individual claimed a Bigfoot came out of the woods, was visible in an open field not far from his house. So can there be a connection? There may be a connection back to these. Now, did they come from the craft, or is it just something that's here already going to the craft? I can't say. There's even been reports of one of my witnesses that I worked a case about 8-9 years ago described almost like a miniature type of a Bigfoot in her yard. And it was around times when she was having paranormal events. So there can be a connection out there.
Is there a list of the different types of aliens that people are reporting? And if so, how large is it?
Well, I've heard, number one, the Heinz 57 variety of aliens. And they've brought this up at some of our meetings. Oh, there's 57 different types. Well, to me, I think that would be extremely limiting on air. When we get reports into MUFON, we actually have an area where individuals can describe the types of entities people are seeing out there, and it goes into our database. And I really think that, that's almost on our Barbara Unlimited. I mean, a lot of people associate with aliens with automatically with the greats, but you also hear of different ones, in this case, reptilians, insectoids. You've got, in this case, some that were popular, especially back in like the 1950s, a Nordic-looking type alien. Matter of fact, even when you have the grays, you have tall aliens, you have or tall grays, you have short grays. And there's a lot of varieties. I don't think there is truly an exact number out there.
Does one of those grays, they have big black eyes, don't they?
Yes, they do. And that's kind of like the what I remembered seeing.
Have you ever seen a cross-eyed one?
You know, no. All I saw was huge black eyes. and one night, Honor Henry, you know, I was after I did my first regression, I kind of felt like Richard Dreyfuss. I was sitting in front of my computer, not with mashed potatoes in front of me, kind of stacking them up. But what I did is on my computer, I had Photoshop up and I pulled up an image of an alien. And I was, matter of fact, leafing through tons of images. And all of a sudden, I hit one that caught my attention. And I started playing with it on Photoshop, adjusting it, manipulating it, and so forth. Kind of like Richard Dreyfuss, kind of like stacking the potatoes up to resemble Devil's Tower, you know?
Right.
And all of a sudden, after I did some manipulation, for some reason, I flipped the image and mirrored it. So it created a mirror image of the original, and I completely lost it when I was sitting at my computer. My wife would have freaked out because I was basically bawling at my computer saying, that's it. That is it. I mean, I really lost it. And it didn't have crossed eyes, Henry. I just remembered seeing this thing at very, very close proximity.
Oh,
And I felt like it really tapped into its mind on there, Barbara, going back to the mind control.
Interesting. And we have somebody in the chat room, and it's an interesting correlation because in the paranormal now, there's a group called the Black-Eyed Children and Black-Eyed Adults, which the eyes are just completely black. No color in it whatsoever. And I'm wondering if that is also some sort of hallucination of you will see us that and we are going to look like this as opposed to an owl.
You know, and that's possible. I mean, what I thought of the owl time image on there, one of the correlations I put together was maybe something is creating an image in our minds since we're kind of like, we're not really children, but we're basically children, you know, mm-hmm. That's a less fearsome type of an image that won't scare us off or make us panic. Don't make us more relaxed. But I remember when I saw the one up close, at least that's what my mind is telling me. I saw something up very, very close. I seemed like it was just peering into black eyes of nothingness. That there was almost zero emotion behind what was there. And maybe that was intentional, that they didn't want me to sense anything that was there, you know? But it just like it was peering into complete black is the only way to describe it.
Well, this, go ahead.
No, and I couldn't take my focus off it. I kept staring completely straight ahead.
Wow. I'm glad I've never seen anything. I'd have probably lost it. Always afraid of those things. So,
well, I'm curious as to why the flipped image did it,
well,
as opposed to just being able to recognize it.
What was happening under Barbara's, when I'm sitting down, I mean, when I went through the regression, I remember telling the individual who's doing the regression that this entity was on my right hand side, and I kept staring at this entity on the right hand side.
Okay.
But when I mirrored it, the entity was on it's the left side, and for some reason that is the one that was scaring me.
Maybe
it was like
the side you actually seen it.
Yeah, and I that's what it really was, is when I mirrored it, there was two there, not one. The one on the left side was the one that was really scaring me, that had me terrified. The one on the right was almost like observing. The one on the left was the one that was really doing the examination, and that was the one I was really more scared of. And when I flipped that image, it brought back, I guess you could say, that terror associated with that event.
Wow.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of blowed right on through last break. I'm not going to go ahead and take one now, but I will let everybody know that they're listening to the Paranormal View right here on the Parex Radio Network, and got a great chat room and great questions. So feel free to come over and listen and give us some questions. I got a question. This video that was released by the government, how's come if it's something that they actually captured, one of the Navy pilots, that they actually released it to the public? It's like saying, hey, there is something there.
You know, and this is where I've heard different stories on. On one hand, Elizondo was saying really it wasn't classified. It was like it was basically like a declassified material that was stored on a classified system. That's one of the stories coming out. And that's why it was kind of like easy to release it, because it really wasn't classified. But now maybe on the other hand, that's what the government's also saying to maybe kind of protect some of their own interests, because maybe it was a classified video. And if you think about it, Elizondo left, he goes private industry. And he was the one who most likely released the videos on there. So he kind of like got off a last salvo before he got off and said, hey, I'm going to release these two videos that are really interesting on here. They don't appear to be of a highly classified nature. I can get them out there, and this will draw public interest. So, I mean, you could go both ways. One, you could say maybe the government kind of slipped up and he slid one by him. Or on the other hand, the other story I've heard is maybe they weren't as highly classified as what may be implied. That maybe the government knows what these objects were and they just let the videos out.
Or is it possible that because funding or donations slowed down at the STARS website, that this has been leaked to promote more donations?
Couldn't deny that, because things seem to be very well timed out there, Barbara, because they released the initial videos when the organization was starting. And then they made basically the comment that there's more information coming. So it's almost in this case, under Henry, like you're watching, to kind of age us a little bit here, the old Batman TV shows, Lost in Space, and it would show you what's coming next week.
Right.
They would give you a teaser to draw you back in.
Mm-hmm.
And under Barbara, it almost seems like when I heard that initially come out about the initial videos with more to come, that was the first thought that ran through my mind, is it almost seems like you give me a teaser to keep me drawing, going right back to the website. And it could be a way of maintaining ongoing funds.
Interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah, wow. You can kind of see that scenario, especially in today's environment, of the manipulation going on like that.
Yeah, manipulation with, you look at the manipulation of Facebook, you look at the manipulation of so many other areas, YouTube, all these other areas of social media can affect you. To me, that would be a good way of them maintaining an income, monetary income.
Without having to go to the government? Or is the government saying, this is a good method of getting cash that's untraceable for the most part?
That's it. I mean, it's a separate source of income. I mean, they may have other monies coming in from private individuals. Maybe the government's also cooperating in certain ways, saying, okay, if you need this looked at, yeah, we'll look at it. We'll give you some feedback. There may be a little mutual back scratching from a number of sources on there with this whole thing. And I don't know if you'll ever really unravel the whole money trail behind everything and who all is involved 100% and who's all doing what.
I mean, to what end do you think this is all coming out? Is it to give us an upper hand when we finally do get first contact or make it known that we have had contact? Or is it something else?
Well, there's been the hopes that this is kind of like the beginning of disclosure, that they're finally coming out and kind of gradually leaking out that, yes, we've had knowledge going on for years that things have been there. We're now going to admit that, yes, we have collected evidence. Yes, we have had encounters. There have been reported abductions. I mean, gradually leaking everything out. That's one of the speculations. But again, it goes back to that big word, speculation. Will it happen overnight if that's the case? No, I don't think so. It'd be a gradual release of information on there. I don't know if the general public could handle basically like the dam breaking and everything coming out all at once.
So let me ask you, and I've heard it from all kinds of different people, yes and no. Do you think that the government has already made contact with aliens?
I think it's highly likely they have. I mean, we've heard reports. We hear about Roswell, but there are other events way before Roswell that occurred. I mean, there are stories going back to the 1930s and 1940s about potential contact on there. So I think if they know, they've known for a very, very long time. And I'm pretty sure of that. Why they haven't released information to the general public? Maybe number one, they've always been looking for that advantage over other countries out there. And they want to keep it quiet. That's a high possibility. They may also think that we may not be able to accept what they're finding out.
Yeah, that would probably be the biggest thing. And in my opinion, if our government's had contact with them, I'm sure that some of the other governments around the world has had contact with them also.
You'd think like United Kingdom, Russia, we'd never really know what would be coming out of there. Same with China.
Yeah.
But there's so many other potential countries out there. To me, I mean, the impression I had going back to kind of like my memories on there, that they're not infallible, that they can make mistakes, that you may have a craft crash. I mean, that they're not perfect. I mean, we think of like robotic perfect sometimes. The impression I got is not that they can make mistakes. If that's the case, then we most likely have recovered something for years. But the thing is being able to reverse engineer that technology and how to utilize that technology we come across. That's going to be the challenge.
So do you think that, I'm sure that they've traveled years, and I'm not sure how they time travel or whatever. Do you think that it's regular aliens or might be like robotics or something?
Well, when I was describing the entities I saw, I had the feeling like there was nothing there, like no emotions. Mm-hmm. And to me, when you think about another entity, you think of that entity may have emotions. I sensed there was almost like nothing there. But I also felt like I was able to tap into its mind. And I felt like it was almost like I was in a hive that I was able to tap in and connect with all these other entities wherever they were. It was just something that I just felt. So it almost makes you believe that either these entities have absolutely no feelings. They don't know how we, and maybe that's one of the things they're looking at is our emotions. Maybe they don't understand emotions.
Because you figure if emotions are a brain chemistry, and if they have a mm-hmm. different type of chemistry, they may not feel it.
No, and maybe that's one of the ongoing things they're looking at is they don't understand our emotions and why we do things the way we do.
It also would explain, too, I mean, if we have a crash, if Roswell was real and we did have aliens and one of them did survive the crash for a period of time, if I were an alien species and somebody was experimenting on my people, I'd be a little miffed.
Yeah, I mean, you may not understand why they were, you know, why are they looking at mm-hmm. us the way they are? Like dissecting something, you know, maybe they may not understand that whatsoever, you know.
I would assume that there's minerals here on this planet that they might need for their fuel or for food or whatever. And that's why they visit here. It's like if you're going from here to California, you got to stop at the gas station and stuff along the way. I would assume it'd be something like that, maybe.
That's possible. I mean, you mentioned earlier about the ocean out in California. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something about the water because there have been objects sighted coming out of the water on here. Now, one hand, it could be a place to hide. Can't deny that. I mean, that way you wouldn't see something during the day. But on the other hand, maybe they're going after some source, like you say, some source of energy.
But we found water on other planets. So it's not it's not that uncommon. So
no.
It's interesting what they're looking
for. It is. I mean, the pilots in the videos off the California coast, they not only contacted the pilots, but they reached out to a nuclear sub that was in the region. And they wanted to know if the nuclear sub had picked up sonar returns from that same area because of the disturbance on the water. Maybe they were not just looking to follow up on the disturbance of the water, but maybe they knew characteristics of these objects that they had come from underwater. And maybe they're looking for that connection.
Well, they think that there's a underwater UFO base near the Catalina Island out there. So they said, I guess they've had lots and lots and lots of sightings through the years.
Well, so. I'll tell you what, I'm willing to get a GoFundMe started up, and I'm willing to travel out there, Henry, if you want to go along with me.
Hey, I'm okay. Let's go right now. we'll go out there and do our own research. How does that sound?
There you go. That sounds great to me right now.
We get Barbara come down from the north up there.
That's it. I mean, I'd gladly go out there and try to collect as much evidence as possible.
Well, that does sound good to me. I'm all game for it anytime you want to try and go.
All right.
Now, has, since the last time we talked, UFO sightings, has it increased at all? Or is it just that the interest has increased? I know that you've said that you have a lot more attendance at your meetings now.
Yeah, the attendance is going up. I mean, the interest is going back up because of events like this Pentagon story coming out. I mean, it reached national attention. It came out on Fox News and other major networks. The Washington Post had it on their site, the New York Times. I mean, this really helps get the information out. And as example, I mean, I was we do talks here in Ohio. I do. I do our bi-monthly meetings down in Columbus area, the capital. At times, I mean, we're spread out over the whole state. So, I mean, you may get 25 people being able to show up on a Saturday morning for a talk or bi-monthly meetings. Well, a couple weeks ago, we had 50 people jammed into a little tiny room at the library, and I was not expecting that. And a lot of them were coming because they saw the posting of the topic I had was the Pentagon, and it piqued people's interest. Now, I've got another talk coming up in a little small community called Stowe, which is a small town outside of Akron, Ohio. A library down there asked me to come in and do a talk. And I think they were expecting maybe like 30 people showing up, something like that, to hear about UFOs. They listed it on their billboard for 3 days in a row. They started accepting signups. And I called them yesterday, and they said, we have 80 people signed up already, and we're looking at maxing the room out at 100 right now. And when do you want to schedule your next talk? They were completely blown away. Reports coming into our national website are now starting to go on the upslide again, because not just of interest from individuals seeing the Pentagon report, but the weather's now starting to break and people are starting to get back outside again now, which will start opening up the reports, because it tends to drop off some in the wintertime, especially if you're kind of up in the area around DC, Philadelphia, and places like that, where we're really getting hammered with the bad weather here recently. So I think we're going to see an increase, and I'm just curious to see, Barbara, what it turns out to be like by, let's say, for example, September, getting into the fall. The summer months will really tell us, especially, I guess you could say, starting off in April and May. If you see a high number of reports increase, it's going to be an indicator kind of like what the rest of the year, I think, is going to be like. And I think our international director, Jan Harzen, is really saying that the Pentagon story combined with everything else is going to really increase the number of reports for over the whole year.
Now, with the USOs out in California out there, how much have you heard of USO bases or anything like that up near Cleveland out in the waters up there?
Well, there's been talks of USOs, I should say, off the coast of Ohio on Lake Erie. One of the reports I did have been coming personally was a data report that came in from the 1980s, early 1990s. The individual was working at a Ford plant along Lake Erie, and he was doing security work. He was a guard, and he was outside. He saw an object rise directly out of the lake, come directly overhead. And he said he was close enough he could shine a cell flashlight at it, which illuminated the surface, but it almost looked like he could almost see through it yet. But he could see the light hitting like the surface of an object, and it went directly over him. I went back and checked newspapers from that region at the same time, and other individuals also reported something coming from the lake. So there were correlating reports on there. There's also been reports on there, Henry, over by the power plants of individuals seeing orbs along the power plant over on the east side. And right now we're still investigating a case over by an area called Oak Harbor, which has a nuclear power plant. One of my friends I was communicating with yesterday said that her son had seen an object over the power plant that was there for roughly about 5 minutes before it left. And it's been an ongoing thing. So we're still researching that one to see if we can find a known cause. But again, it goes right back to an area, Henry, you're right on the lake and there's water right there. And we don't know if the objects are, let's say, disappearing in the water or where, if that's where they're originating from. So we've had a number of reports along the lake, and some of those have seen the objects coming directly out.
Wow.
Almost makes you wonder if the water somehow is needed for the transport.
I don't know. It's either that, or it could be just a source that they're drawing something from.
Right.
Or simply just a place to hide.
I was going to say, there's, you my know, opinion. Europa has water. Mars has water. They found water on the moon as well. You know, you think you would go to a planet that doesn't have a life form on it if you don't want to be seen.
Right. And the easiest way to hide if you're on that planet would be below water, because how much of the world is water? What, 60, 75%?
But they also are around nuclear power plants too. So I wonder if they're able to draw power from a nuclear power plant. And if they are, can a nuclear power plant read in their meters if power is being sucked off?
See, I haven't seen any reports that they've been able to monitor that. But then again, the data at the nuclear power plant would be extremely difficult to get a hold of on there. But I do remember reading reports going clear back, 1960s, of objects being sighted close to high power lines. And on our MUFON report, reports that we submit, one of the areas that they look for data at is things close to where the objects were seen. Now, of course, you have airports, but another one is high tension lines or power plants is what they're looking at. Another interesting, what's a little bit more off the wall, Henry, is train tracks.
Huh? Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the guys I collected data from that passed away a number of years ago, one thing he was looking at was things around seen by people on trains, crew that worked on trains, and he was looking for data from them. And there was a case over in Western Ohio of which an object was seen not very far from a train track, just hovering there. And it was so close enough that the engineer of the train flashed its light at the object, and the object responded.
Huh.
Yeah.
Maybe there was something near the railroad tracks that they was looking at, or maybe it was water or something it was trying to get. I don't know.
Yeah, in that area, I don't remember any water, but who knows? Maybe something with the metal being a conductor.
Could be. And it's just like roadways. Maybe railroad tracks is an easy way for them to follow.
Well, our planes do. I mean, when you fly by visual flight rules, we follow highways and so forth. So it's possible.
Well, our time. Go ahead, Barbara.
Going to say, if you're going to do a sociological study of a species, transport would be one of the things you'd want to study.
Go back to the organizations and look at the individuals that are pulling in again.
Yeah.
Well, our time has just flown right on by again tonight. And as always, Thomas is always a great guest and love to have him come on and talk, because then I don't have to say too much.
Well, right now I'm on my third cup of coffee right now, so I'm in good shape.
Wow. Well, it was a great show, lots of information, and I'll be looking forward to any more information that you can get between now and the next time we have you.
I'll be working on it.
Which probably won't be too long. Let's see. Now, it's only about 3 weeks before we go to Gettysburg, and
right,
talk on the show then, too. So,
okay.
Of course, everybody goes to Gettysburg usually gets to talk, say something anyway, which is always good. And with that, why don't you tell people how they can follow you, get in contact with you, and all about Ohio MUFON.
Well, if they want to get a hold of me, they can go, number one, to MUFONOhio.com, which is our organization's website, and they can send an email in there, and they can reach out to me from that organization. The organization also has our bi-monthly meetings posted on there, along with any special programs I'm going to be doing. I haven't got the Gettysburg thing on there yet, Henry, but I've got some other events coming up even before that now posted, some library programs I'm doing around the state, and also I'm doing a paranormal thing in Toledo in a couple weeks. Also a Star Trek thing coming up in a couple weeks on there.
Wow, I'll have to get on there and look at those.
Yeah, so those are on our group's website. Also check out our Facebook page. I try to post everything and try to update it as soon as possible on that page.
I don't think I'm even linked to that. I'll have to do that. So we'll do that. And Barbara?
You can find all the host information on our website, theparanormalview.com.
And another great show tonight. Appreciate everybody listening and being here. And again, I want to thank Thomas for taking the time to be with us. Always love when he's on. He's got lots of good information, and we can just chit-chat, have a how they say it, a fireside chit chat or whatever.
That's why I like the show so much.
So until next week, and we'll be on again. This is Henry Foister and Jeffrey Gould, who is not here tonight, but he will be next week, I hope. So until then, we will see you next week. So good night, everybody.
You've been listening to The Paranormal View on the ParaX Radio Network. Join us again next week at the same time for more of The Paranormal View.